could move to judiciary. Is that the where we move? We could, if I move this bill, and we could, that would allow us the time here, since it's Friday afternoon, to have the stakeholders come here and work out that information before the next committee meeting. I would, we could come to some agreements where we're at.
On that, but, Senator Lynch.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, I don't know what I think about that. I just have to say, because I think we're the Health Policy Committee. I'm thinking we had a lot of discussion in here today. And I feel as if we are, I don't know, maybe on the one hand, I'm just extending a lot of faith in you based on all the discussion that transpired here, that it will be fixed to a level that seems okay.
That's,
I'm nervous. I'm nervous about sending things on to other jurisdictions that have basically nothing to do with health policy, because we are sending a very strong signal to that next jurisdiction that this is the view of the Health Policy Committee. I just needed to share
Senator Lynch, though this is a data practices issue that we're talking about there, and that is judiciary issue. The overall policy.
Yeah. I have no problem with it going to judiciary.
You're just saying that you were thinking it's more health policy than privacy.
No, Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, what I'm suggesting is that the language that's being worked on is more pertinent to health policy.
Okay. Senator Berglund.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think as long as the parties have agreed to work on something for this issue of the small distributors with these fragile patients and their drugs, that should be a good enough thing. I mean, I guess I didn't realize it was going to take longer than we had today to work on it, but you know,
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, they both said they can come to an agreement, but they don't feel that that right now with 10 minutes or 15 minutes was enough time to really work that language out in detail.
Sure. Well, I feel satisfied as long as people are talking with you.
Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I've got some of the same reservation as Senator Lynch. I think this does have big impact on health policy, and I guess to me it points out the complexity of this, and I know Senator Dahl has been working on this, but we've uncovered here today apparently an area that was unknown to the as this bill was moving forward. And I had some conversation with the folks that raised this question after the hearing, and one of the things they indicated to me was that what you're basically going to have to do is, in effect, undertake a modification or integration with HIPAA laws in some cases to accomplish this, and that's a fairly extensive operation. I don't know that you could do it in a couple of days, or it might take much longer time than that, but there's no question that it has impact on health policy. And I'm very uncomfortable saying, well, we're okay with the policy, let's just go forward and let the Judiciary Committee wrestle with it in the next couple of days. I'm not sure that it'd even be ready then, but I think we're abdicating our responsibility.
Senator Hand, we can't change HIPAA. HIPAA trumps this anyway, and HIPAA is a data practices issue. I mean, I think they spend as much time on it as we do. Senator Dahl, what's your wish?
I'd like to move it forward, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dahl moves it Senate File 3699. Be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on Judiciary.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hand.
Can we move this without recommendation?
You can amend the motion.
I would amend the motion to move without recommendation.
Senator Hand moves to amend the motion without recommendation. On that motion, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion. No. Motion prevails. On Senator Dahl's motion as amended to move the bill forward to Judiciary Committee without recommendation, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senate File 3701.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senate File 3701 is a bill that would, I think it's very much in line with a lot of the other reforms we're talking about this year, about opening more financial disclosure of what's going on in healthcare field, and this is one of the areas which the most convoluted economics and the least competitive and most secretive of all, and that deals with the prescription drug pricing. And the PBMs, the pharmaceutical benefit managers, one of which testified on the previous bill, have the role, an interesting role, of connecting people, connecting health plans, connecting individuals, everybody with the pharmaceuticals they purchase, and there are all kinds of financial arrangements, often known as rebates, various kinds of fees. I think the one label that would apply to most of them is kickback. They're undisclosed payments that affect the pricing and affect the purchases and so on. This bill is simply a bill that would make it a lot more understandable to the customers who are purchasing the health plans and insurance companies and consumers about what's going on with the prescription drug pricing. Section 1 of the bill is simply enforcement provision. Section 2, definitions. The covered entities are basically health plans, insurance plans, hospitals. Pharmacy subdivision 6 on page 2, you can see the definition of pharmacy benefits management and therefore what pharmacy benefits managers are. Section 3 of the bill, when we start getting the substance of it, is it requires the PBMs to have a certificate of authority to operate in the state, and related to that, so in effect they'd be registered with the department, and under that they would be then required to provide to their covered entities, which again are the health plans, the hospitals, the insurance companies, they'd be required to provide them and anybody else it contracts with the financial and utilization information that those folks request, including all rebates, discounts, other forms of economic incentives that apply, and that would also be given to the Attorney General's office for purpose of enforcing Section 151061, which is our unfair price discrimination statute, which I think widely violated and nobody has any way of knowing. And then Section 5 of the bill deals with dispensing therapeutic alternatives or generic drugs, and it is basically saying that the PBM can request to switch to lower-priced generic and therapeutically equivalent drug for a higher-priced one. If they are going to request one that costs more than the prescribed drug, the switch can only be made for medical reasons that benefit the covered individual. And before a switch would be made, the PBM would have to obtain approval from the prescribing doctor and would have to disclose to the health plan and the individual the cost of the drugs and any benefit or payment directly or indirectly going to the PBM as a result of the switch. Section 6 deals with the fact that more and more, I think even our state health plan now requires us to purchase most of our prescriptions mail order, and this would allow that to continue except for they cannot require an individual to switch from a retail one to a mail order one unless the mail order pharmacy offers drugs at the same or lower price, because sometimes they describe it that way and they're actually a higher price. Section 7 and so on is just the enforcement and the rules for it. I have Mr. Lee Grotzik from the Senior Federation to speak to the bill, and I'd be happy to stand for questions either before or after.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, my name is Lee Grotzik. I'm with the Minnesota Senior Federation, and I want to thank you for yet another opportunity to speak today. I hope, however, I don't set off the sort of long discussion we had last time I spoke. As I mentioned earlier, the Minnesota Senior Federation has quite a history when it comes to concerns about prescription drug costs and cost containments. This focus has forced us to learn and study the pharmaceutical industry, and this has led us to believe that the practices of the pharmaceutical or pharmacy benefit managers needs transparency. I want to talk to you just a second about how we really got into this issue. Some time ago, I think it was actually in 2003, There was an article in the Pioneer Press written by Tony Pugh called Prescription Drug Strategies Under Fire. And in that article, he wrote that one estimate is that 10% of the $161 billion spent by Americans on prescription drugs in 2002 was spent on side deals and undisclosed payments from drug companies to PBMs. That's what sort of started and piqued our interest. Now, PBMs, as it was explained earlier in previous testimony, are the middlemen that negotiate rebates and manage drug benefits for health plans, business, and government programs. They advertise themselves as saving money for government and the private sector, but the record is somewhat checkered. Although PBMs can and do provide a useful service in managing prescription drug benefits, their activities are shrouded in secret and replete with questionable practices. Many dozens of lawsuits have been filed against PBMs. Plaintiffs include the federal and state governments, private corporations, pharmacists, HMOs, unions, and individuals. The defendants include all the big three PBMs, as well as many of the smaller ones. The National Legislative Association on Prescription Drug Prices, a nonpartisan, independent, nonprofit organization founded by state legislators seeking to reduce drug prices and expand access to prescription drug medications, did a review of the allegations, disclosures, and findings of the lawsuits, and concluded that there are concerns about PBMs retaining manufacturer payments, that is, rebates, discounts, and other fees, instead of passing them through the payments to the clients, and the clients weren't aware of those payments, that they switch plan members from low to high cost drugs, and that they tended to favor high cost drugs on their formularies, and that they basically work with the manufacturers in violation of best pricing regulations. As I looked at the information and we proceeded with pursuing this legislation, which is actually, about 4 years old, this practice didn't appear to be diminishing, despite the fact that some of the litigation has been settled for literally millions of dollars, and the industry has been pledging transparency. Enacting PBM transparency will remove the shroud of secrecy, ensuring contracting with them will actually, those contracting them will actually have enough information to evaluate and compare PBM proposals and make the market more competitive. Passing this legislation in Minnesota would also put us in pretty good company. 13 other states in the District of Columbia have passed similar legislation, and Minnesota is actually surrounded on two sides by states that have enacted similar legislation, Iowa, North Dakota, and South Dakota. As a matter of fact, in South Dakota, $820,000 was saved in state health insurance costs in a single year. Minnesota Senior Federation urges the passage of this legislation.
Thank you, Senator Marty.
Madam Chair.
Excuse me, Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you. And Senator Marty and Mr. Gratchik, I guess the first question I have is there any requirement that any entity undertake to contract with a PBM to do business in Minnesota? The reason I'm asking is that I know in the state health plan that we're subject to, we got a card this year for the first time that's got a PBM on it. We haven't had that before, and I assume that the state of Minnesota decided that it would be in the best interests of the state and of their members to contract with the PBM. And I'm just wondering if there's no restriction or no prohibition or no requirement that they do it, but they're free to do it, why would we want to, in effect, do away with PBMs as an enterprise?
Madam Chair, Senator Hand, a couple of responses. One, this bill isn't doing away with them. It's just having price disclosure. Number two, the state, you presumably had a PBM you were dealing with in the past, but it was through your health plan, not through the state's new PBM. I can't think of the name, but I've used it as well. the issue and why the state would choose to use it is because that's the way the system is set up, and you're going to get ripped off if you don't. And you may be getting ripped off if you do, but you can't know how much you're getting ripped off. You just know that the system, you're going to get taken. If you have at least somebody who might be on your side, you're better off than if you have nobody on your side, because it's totally, totally closed price system. It's the most anti-competitive pricing scheme you can imagine. And so having a PBM that's doing all these secret negotiations may help you, but you can't know if you're doing better than somebody else is doing for the same drugs.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Marty, I don't know a lot about PBMs before today, but I assume that there's more than one, and so there are competitive entities out there that are competing for business, and I am guessing, and maybe we'll get testimony on this further, but I'm assuming that they're going to get in a contractual arrangement with the providers or the insurers and the plans, and their activities would be governed by those practices or those contracts. And some of the things that you're calling for in terms of disclosure, if those same kinds of things were imposed on other businesses in the state, would, in effect, cause those businesses to go out of business because they would lose the ability to negotiate in secret, as you might call it. But that is part of what the competitive marketplace does. It allows for people to enter into relationships that they don't have to disclose to others who might, by knowing that, take advantage of that. And so one of the things that concerns me is if we say we're going to make all this negotiation and all this stuff that is going in public, then there would be no incentive to try to find ways to get better. There would be every incentive to see the prices, in effect, become the same for everybody and, in fact, over time become more and more costly. It seems to me that if you want to see prices go down, you got to have a marketplace. And I would certainly agree that we don't have as good a marketplace as we should. But doing this, to me, is a diminishment of that marketplace and not an enhancement of it. But how would the requirement to expose all this information do anything but harm to the businesses that are negotiating for these contracts?
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Hand, it depends. Harm to whom, the PBM or the customer? The health plan, the insurance plan, the hospital, the individual who's buying the drugs under this scheme has no clue what anybody else is paying. They work with the term average wholesale price for pharmaceuticals. It's not an average. It's not a wholesale price. It's nothing to do with it. Everything in the pharmaceutical pricing scheme is convoluted, and the customers have no way of knowing what they should be paying otherwise. About 8-10 years ago now, there was a lawsuit from pharmacies. It was the large chain drugstores, the Walmarts, I presume Osco Drugs, Walgreens, had a major lawsuit related to this issue. And they were documenting price disparities. And they were on the short end of the stick here. They were documenting price disparities between what some customers would do. I remember one heart medication, Indraw, where price disparity was $4.12 for 1 month supply for some customers, $48 for the other, 12-to-1 price disparity. They were getting the short end of the stick. These are large customers. Walgreens buys a lot of drugs. And they were suing because they were on the long end of that because others, due to their kickbacks, whatever they call them, rebates, collateral contracts, I suppose is the proper term for them, that they were exposing 12-to-1 price disparities. And that's not a competitive market. And if the customer can't know what they should be paying, what they could be paying, if they can't know all the other dealings, the kickbacks, the undisclosed payments, you have no way to have a market.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Hamm.
Senator Marty, I guess from my experience in business, as limited as it may be, that all pricing activity is convoluted. There's all kinds of things that go into pricing activity in any kind of business. I worked for a sandwich manufacturing company, and I can tell you that it's very difficult, and it's there are lots of things that go into the determination of that. But there are reasons why there are price differentials. And the premise of your argument seems to be that everybody ought to pay the same price for everything. But we don't, and we don't do that in any kind of product, good or service. There's all kinds of reasons why there are price disparities. And the competitive element in this is that as providers of goods and services try to negotiate with people they do business with, they're offering them services and trading off what they perceive to be of value, and they both come to an agreement. They say, this is a good deal for both of us, and we agree. And in the course of that agreement, the prices have to reflect the costs of those agreements. And so if you say, well, we're going to force everybody to disclose all of this, then what you do have is you have uniform pricing. And you say that that's not your intent, but that would be the effect. You would have uniform pricing. You would not have any incentives for cost reduction. And I think that you would, in effect, drive out of business these organizations that apparently right now are of benefit. Otherwise, people wouldn't contract with them to do what they do.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Marty, on line 3.24, just need a little help with this. I'm not sure what a therapeutically equivalent drug is, but what my concern is, and I hope that it's that I'm just not understanding this, but my concern is this doesn't mean that the pharmacy benefit manager can switch the prescription to, I don't know, to an alternative form, and I just need some help with that.
Madam Chair, I'll Senator respond Marty. To Senator Lynch's, and then Mr. Gossett wanted to respond to Senator Hand's. You're right. Therapeutic equivalent would be the Bayer aspirin versus aspirin. It would not be aspirin versus Tylenol versus Advil. Those are not therapeutically equivalent. They have the same purpose. They're similar drugs. The therapeutic equivalent would be the same drug, the generic versus the brand name, if you want to put it that way. So yes, your point is right. We're talking only about therapeutic equivalents here. And, Madam Chair, if Mr. Gratzik wanted to comment on some of Senator Hand's thing, and I have another comment on that as well.
Senator Hand, you brought up the discussion about the market. The state of Maine was one of the first states to pass this legislation, and as you can well imagine, it went into litigation. Ultimately, it went to the Federal District Court for appeal, and Maine won. In the ruling of the court stated that there was a lack of transparency, which has a tendency to undermine a benefit provider's ability to determine which is the best proposal among competing proposals from PBMs. Then it went on to say that PBMs afford a valuable bundle of service to benefit providers. However, they also introduce a layer of fog to the market that prevents benefit providers from fully understanding how to best minimize their net prescription drug costs.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Hand.
And thank you, Mr. Gratzik. And my only question is, if that is true, then why would anybody contract to work with them?
Well, Senator Marty alluded to this earlier, and I hate to use the term, but it's the only game in town. There aren't alternatives. The way it's set up, you almost have to use a PBM. The other thing to keep in mind is if you look at the growth of PBMs over the last 20 years, many of them come directly out of and have been set up and wholly owned by the manufacturers.
Well, and Madam Chair and Mr. Gratzik, I also understand that there are PBMs that are operated by the providers as well. And so it seems like what we have is there's a function that has to be performed in the marketplace, which is the administration of these drug plans, and there are different ways to do it. If you're a plan provider, you can say, well, we'll do it in-house. We'll figure out our own way to do it, and we'll do it. And so you set up a PBM, I guess, within the context of your business, or you can have other independent people do it. And so there's nothing to prohibit or require that anybody do it any one way. And so they choose to contract with an independent organization, and it very well could be that they may not know the content of the negotiations that those organizations are having with other providers in other parts of the state or other parts of the country. That's not unusual, nor is that bad. They negotiate. They say, this is the deal that we want for our customers, our patients, and we're willing to pay this price for it. And they sign the deal. And if somebody else somewhere else has a different set of constraints and they form a different deal, so they form a different deal. How that activity is bad or adds to cost, I don't see. In fact, I would argue that that is very beneficial.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Han, a couple of responses. First of all, when the customer doesn't know all the dealings that are happening, if they don't know that PBM has cut a deal with this drug company this way and the rebates are flowing that way, you can't make a logical decision when you don't know the information. If you can be told this customer's, this drug costs this much, this drug costs that much, period, you might be able to make a logical choice. But if you don't know all the other dealings going on, and let me suggest, I actually didn't support the whole package, but this committee did put its imprint on a bill a week or two ago that is very much in the idea that price disclosure and standard prices. It said that we passed a bill, Senator Berglund's bill says that doctor, clinic, facility, hospital, anybody can set whatever price they want, but they have to have a consistent price for everyone. No charging some people twice as much as others. That was this committee's decision because they think, and I agree with that, that we should be trying to not have people where you're going to charge one person because they're insured with a health plan, you're going to charge them 50% less than some individual trying to buy it on the individual market. We passed legislation to do that, and this is not new for prescription drugs. In 1973, we passed an unfair price discrimination law, which prohibits any person doing business in the state, which would include PMs, engaged in distribution other than retail of any prescription drugs, shall discriminate between purchasers by selling prescription drugs at a lower price or rate to one purchaser or association of purchasers than another purchaser association within this state other than retail, after making allowance for price, for difference in grade, quality, quantity, etc., shall be guilty of unfair price discrimination. That's what we set in law long before you and I were ever here. And there's a reason for that, to make sure, because prescriptions are so essential to our health, we have a law here, and it's very much in fitting with the trend we're doing this year in terms of price disclosure. This bill fits right in with that. And we, Madam Chair, we do have, I know there's some witnesses who wish to speak with concerns about the bill as well, so maybe you want to call them.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Those wishing to come forward and testify, please do. Senator Marty, I have David Root and Linda Carol Schern. Is that correct?
If I can, my name's Vern Rowan. I'm Vice President of Government Affairs for Express Scripts.
Would you say your last name again, please?
Rowan, R-O-W-E-N.
Thank you, Mr. Rowan. Go ahead.
I'm Vice President of Government Affairs for Express Scripts. Express Scripts is one of the nation's largest pharmacy benefit managers. Headquartered in St. Louis, Missouri, we have a large office here in Bloomington, Minnesota. However, about 2,500 employees right off of Highway 100 and 494. We provide services to about 50 million Americans across the country, including in the state of Minnesota. We provide our services to health plans, employers, state government. Express Scripts holds the contract with the Federal Department of Defense. We are in the business of reducing prescription drug costs for our clients. That is why we exist. That's the only reason we exist. In fact, our motto is we only make money when our clients save money. And that's the motto that we hold ourselves accountable to. I know there have been some discussion of exactly what PBMs are and what they do, but I'd like to go through that in a little more detail because I think it's important to understand what we do and what we don't do. We basically try to rationalize and organize the prescription drug delivery system. One of the simplest ways to describe what we do is when you show up at a pharmacy to get your prescription filled as a state employee, you have a card that you show at the pharmacy counter, or basically all the workings behind that. We go out and we negotiate contracts, pricing with retail pharmacies around the country. We contract with about 55,000 pharmacies around the country. Negotiate discounts on behalf of our clients so that when their clients go to that retail counter, they're guaranteed a discount there. We provide mail order pharmacies, which the senator referenced. Mail order pharmacies are highly high tech very efficient methods of delivering certain types of prescriptions, primarily maintenance medications, things that people are going to take on a regular basis. We dispense them in 90-day supplies. We use highly automated machines to deliver this service. We literally fill tens of thousands of prescriptions in a day at a highly accurate rate, about 99.5% accuracy. And it's been found, not by ourselves, but by independent sources, that mail-order pharmacies save anywhere from 10 to 30% over prices charged to individuals at retail pharmacies. And clients make a decision, our clients, whether they want to use our mail-order services or not. We don't require them to. They decide whether they want to or not, is make that available to their customer or to their patients that they serve. We develop formularies for our clients. We basically try to create competition within the brand name pharmaceutical marketplace so that we can negotiate discounts from drug manufacturers. In fact, in the absence of PBMs, the only way you would get a discount from drug manufacturers in the current environment is if the state actually mandated pricing from drug manufacturers. We have that in the Medicaid program here. We have what's called Medicaid Best Price, and state Medicaid programs are guaranteed the best price that manufacturers offer, and that's by law. Commercial marketplace doesn't have the opportunity to avail themselves to that. In the absence of the government stepping in and mandating prices, commercial marketplace uses PBMs to negotiate discounts from drug manufacturers, and we're able to do that because we have 50 million lives. We have 50 million lives to negotiate with. And that's pretty strong motivation for manufacturers to step up and offer a discount when their drug is equally effective to a competitor's drug and safe, just as safe. They compete with each other, and they offer us the best discount they can. Now, one of the reasons they compete is drug manufacturer A and drug manufacturer B doesn't know what the other one is offering as a discount. It's one of the basic tenets of competition. If I'm competing with someone, I know the price they're going to offer. I don't have to compete. I know what it takes to win that bid. I know I just need to go one penny less or 10 cents less than what my competitor's offering, and it's no longer competitive. And that's an important point to remember in this discussion. We also help our clients with plan design, meaning what type of benefits they should offer, how they should structure their copayments. Are there medical management programs, utilization review programs that they should put in place to make sure that certain populations of patients are actually getting the right treatment, the right prescription? Those are kind of the four basic things that we do. Well, our business is more complex than that. And in one sense, what Senator Marty has said is true. This is complex. But that's one of the reasons why clients hire us. In the absence of pharmacy benefit managers, commercial marketplace would have to go out and invent something just like a PBM if they were going to be able to effectively manage millions of transactions a year, pay millions of claims, keep up with the constantly evolving medical literature involving prescription drugs, and effectively manage their costs for this benefit. PBMs developed because you needed an entity in the marketplace that was expert in managing this benefit. And that's why PBMs are used by virtually everyone. Some health plans do their PBM services on their own, but just as many contract with PBMs to do it for their own beneficiaries. Employers decide to contract with PBMs individually on their own as well. To be honest, it is one of the best examples of the private marketplace stepping in, rationalizing the system, and working to the benefit of its clients. And we basically say to our clients, we make about, our profit is about penny and a half, 2 pennies for every dollar that goes through our system. But for that penny and a half or 2 cents that our clients give us for each dollar, we save them about 30 cents. And that's a pretty good business proposition. That, in a nutshell, in 5 minutes, is what PBMs are, what we do, and why we're in the marketplace today. I'd like to move and talk specifically about the Senator's bill, but I think there were a couple of things that maybe were miscommunicated. in the last testimony. Senator, I think the lawsuit you were talking about with the chain pharmacies and their issue with pricing, I don't think that didn't have anything to do with PBMs, did it?
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Mr. Ruin, that was to talk about, the purpose of that was to talk about the disparity in pricing, 12-to-1 price disparity, when you're talking about, oh, we can negotiate if we can get one penny lower than somebody else. That's the point of making that. I agree with a lot of what you're saying. So I'll agree with you that you need somebody to manage pharmaceuticals. I agree with you on much of what you're saying, but that...
Okay, I wanted to understand.
Mr. Rowan.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay. There was also representation made that 13 states have enacted legislation like this. Simply not true. 13 states have enacted legislation that use the words pharmacy benefit manager, but only 2 states have enacted legislation with a transparency requirement like this, and that's Maine and Washington, D.C. The Washington, D.C. law is currently under court challenge. The Maine law was challenged in the courts. The state did prevail. That law has taken effect. I can tell you that my company, and I know several other PBMs, no longer do business in that state because of that transparency requirement, because that transparency requirement basically eviscerates our ability to engage in effective negotiations with manufacturers, because what it lays bare to the public are the details of our contracts and our negotiations with drug manufacturers. The problem with that is you can say, fine, the client should see that. The problem is not with the client seeing it. The problem is with other manufacturers seeing it. When competitors know what other competitors are charging or giving as discounts, they do not bargain as competitively. It just doesn't happen. In fact, I've got 5 letters from the Federal Trade Commission that were sent to states that considered legislation like this. They were sent to California, North Carolina, North Dakota, New Jersey, and Virginia. They all considered laws that were, it's not exact same language, but very similar transparency proposals. And the FTC warned the state against moving forward with legislation like this because it's anti-competitive, will not hurt consumers, will not reduce costs, and in fact is likely to harm consumers and increase costs. That's the Federal Trade Commission.
Mr. Rowan, is that to hand out, or is that just your copies?
These are copies. I can make them available to the committee. I just have one set of copies, but these are the 5 letters.
If anyone wants them, you can request them at some point. Thank you. Is that it, Mr. Rowan, or did you have more?
Yes, I do. Let me move to the bill, and let me talk specifically about the transparency provision. And Madam Chair, if I could, I wanted to ask a clarifying question because I'm a little uncertain of what some of the language means. So I want to ask the senator about that.
Mr. Rowan.
Senator Marty, I'm looking at Section 4, starting on line 3-5, and going down to line 3-11. A literal reading of this says, each PBM shall provide to the covered entity all rebates, discounts, forms of economic incentives that apply between the PBM and the manufacturer, including a list of things. I read that to say that I actually have to provide all that money, any money that's associated with that, I have to actually provide to my client. Was that the intent?
The disclosure of the financial arrangements, what's required.
The disclosure of the arrangement. Okay. I think that might be not quite clear. That's helpful. But I think it's still problematic.
Okay.
Because the disclosure of that arrangement, that rebate arrangement, that discount arrangement, any other type of arrangement, I read to literally mean the disclosure of that contract to my client. And also to the Commerce Commissioner and the Attorney General's office. Well, if they go to the Commerce Commissioner and the Attorney General, that means the public can request them. They're FOIable. That means the drug manufacturers can request those contracts. That means drug manufacturer A can request the contract of drug manufacturer B and find out what discount drug manufacturer B is giving on a particular drug to the PBM or the health plan. And that is the anti-competitive issue. Now, beyond that, if let's say you said, fine, that's not FOIable, they can't disclose that. It's still going to clients, and it's going to clients without any confidentiality protections. No confidentiality protections. And these are trade, this is trademark proprietary information that is essential to what we do to get discounts on behalf of our clients. Yes, Senator.
Senator Lynch. Oh. Senator Lynch, go ahead. Okay, she'll wait.
This is our art, this is our trade. We're the private market solution to getting discounts from manufacturers. And we've worked hard over many years to develop ways to negotiate with them, tactics to negotiate with them, to get the best discounts that we can on behalf of our clients. You're basically asking us to disclose that to our competitors and to disclose that with the people that we're trying to negotiate with to get the best price from. It's for this very reason that the Federal Trade Commission wrote to those five states and said this could result in tacit collusion among manufacturers at worst. At best, it doesn't do anything to help improve competition. Now, let's talk a little bit about transparency in general, because there's a lot of discussion of transparency in the healthcare system today. And for legitimate reasons. More and more people are moving to healthcare savings accounts or health reimbursement accounts where they have money, they're basically their own money that they're paying for healthcare services, and they have a right, arguably, to know what they're going to pay. When they show up at the, let's say they have an HRA and they're paying for the prescription with it, they have a right to know how much is going to be deducted from their HRA at that point. That's transparency, and that's good transparency. Now, what we don't do when we talk about that is say, you know, the consumer should also know, what did that pharmacy pay for that drug? I want to know how much money they're making on that drug. I want to know what they paid and what they charged me. We don't do that, and I don't think anyone around the table would say that that's necessarily a good idea. That's transparency too, but I'll argue that's bad transparency. That's the type of transparency that does not help the marketplace and is not appropriate for competition. So we need to make a distinction between transparency that helps the consumer know what they're paying for something versus transparency that hurts competition. Now, the gentleman from the Senior Federation said that PBMs have made transparency pledges, but they really haven't lived up to them. Well, if what he means is we don't disclose our rebate contracts to our clients, yeah, he's right. We don't do that because that destroys our business. But we do engage in transparency with our clients because our clients do know what they're paying for our services, and actually clients do know what they pay on a drug-by-drug basis for what they purchase from us. They may not know the contract with the manufacturer. They may not be able to see the contract with the manufacturer, but they know the price that they're going to pay for the product. Now, we even go so far let me explain kind of the negotiation, because there's, an assumption that PBMs tell their clients how they're going to do business with them, and that's simply not true. Clients tell PBMs how they want to do business. And some clients say, you know what, I want a fully transparent, fully pass-through deal with you. If you get a rebate from the manufacturer, I want 100% of it. If you get other ancillary payments from the manufacturer, I want 100% of those as well. What we do is we disclose the existence of those revenue sources to our clients, and if they want 100% of them, we give them 100% of them. But then they pay us an admin fee and a higher admin fee. Not everyone wants to do business with us that way. Some clients say, you know what, I don't want 100% of the rebate because I'm willing to let you take part of the rebate to pay for your services so I don't have to pay an admin fee. Other clients say, I want a guarantee of what I'm going to pay. So I want to lock this down. I want to know exactly how much I'm going to get. I don't want it to be variable. The truth of the matter, the point of what I'm saying is there's a lot of flexibility in the marketplace right now about how clients contract with PBMs. The clients ask for things. When a client sends out a request for proposal, they'll get response from 10 or 12 PBMs. And those PBMs have to meet the requirements of what the client's asking for. We're not going to give them our proprietary information, but if they want full pass-through of the rebates, we give it to them. If they want to share the rebates with us, we share it with them, and they pay a lower admin fee. This is about striking the right balance, and the problem with this disclosure provision, this transparency provision, is it doesn't strike a balance. It basically says you have to turn everything over to the client. And, in fact, it doesn't even give the client the option of contracting differently if they choose to. This basically says to the client, you have to contract this way with your PBM because the PBM has to do all these things for you. So I would argue that the marketplace is working. There is transparency in the marketplace. It's the right balance of transparency without disclosing secret proprietary information, but at the same time making sure people know what they're going to have to pay for a product. One other item on the bill that I'll speak about, and then I'll stop. I know it's late. The question about the mail order provision, and if I could ask Senator Marty a question again.
Go ahead, Mr. Rowe.
There seems to be a presumption in this provision that somehow mail order doesn't work as well or isn't as good. And I want to ask the question, would you turn it the other way? If a retail pharmacy cost more, would you allow clients to have to go to mail?
Madam Chair, this doesn't sound like a clarifying question, but nevertheless, I'll answer it. And the way I'd answer it, because you made it sound like I think poorly of mail order pharmacies, I do think that Minnesota pharmacies in small towns are very much needed, and I'm very concerned about the pressure on them. But the issue here, I mean, I use mail order pharmacy. It's cheaper for the drugs that I buy in the plan that I have. This is not changing anything there. It's simply to say that you can't require somebody to switch to that unless the pharmacy offers drugs at the same or lower price. And that's because there are some circumstances where it's not that case. So, Madam Chair, that's the simple answer to the question.
Thank you, Senator Marty.
An observation. Again, it gets back. Why would a client, because this is client's money, why would a client agree to mandate that people go to mail order if it actually costs more than retail? I mean, I throw that out there. I don't think a client would. I think clients know that mail order is less expensive than retail. If it's not, they don't use it. The clients are sophisticated people. These are not small businesses making this decision. Small businesses generally don't contract directly with PBMs. They'll contract with a third-party administrator, or they'll just buy health insurance that includes drug coverage. We're talking about sophisticated purchasers that hire consultants to analyze these contracts, determine which contract is the best deal for them, which channel of distribution is best for them, and how to structure co-payments and benefits to direct people to the most cost-effective channel. So I guess my only question is, why is this provision necessary?
Senator Lynch, did you want to ask your question to Mr. Rowan, or did you want to hear Ms. Carol Sharon first?
Madam Chair, I'm happy to have the testimony continue, and then I'll
okay. Ms. Carol Sharon, do you want to go ahead with your testimony, please?
That the contract negotiations and the agreed upon terms in the contracts are trade secret information and are protected under federal and state law. A trade secret is any information that can be used in the operation of a business or other enterprise and that is sufficient, valuable, and secret to afford an actual or potential economic advantage over the other people that are competing for that contract. This would include pricing details and financial arrangements. The Minnesota Uniform Secrets Act exists to ensure that intellectual property rights stay protected when business is conducted within the state of Minnesota. There are similar protections at the federal level and even constitutionally. In closing, mandated disclosure of contracted arrangements between a PBM and would reveal proprietary business information and destroy competitive negotiations. I think Mr. Rowland did an excellent job explaining how that process works. Thank you again for the opportunity.
Thank you, Ms. Carol Sharon.
So have the handouts, ma'am.
Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, nothing at this point.
Okay. Mr. Root, were you going to testify?
Sure. Thank you very much. I'll be very brief. When I came to this committee, it was good afternoon, and now it's good evening. But again, I would just mirror the comments that we heard from Express Scripts a moment ago, and also just want to make sure that this is very clear, to make sure that the committee understands who our customers are. Our customers are the plan sponsors. Our customers are the state, in this instance, as a plan sponsor. Our customers are those people who contract with us to help them keep those costs down. Very simple terms, they're driving the bus. If, as you heard, if they want pass-through, then they get pass-through. If we don't give them pass-through, then we don't get the contract. And as you also heard, and is very true, and you can look to your own state for that example, the bidding for these RFPs is extremely competitive. There's some 60 PBMs that currently operate around the United States, and they operate in all 50 states, and they compete for every one of those RFPs that go out. So it is not unusual to have 5, 6, 8, 10, 12 people bidding for that one RFP. And if we're not willing to give them what they want in that RFP, then we obviously won't win that business. So those plan sponsors are driving the bus. And one other note that I'll bring to your attention that I find sort of amusing, sad but amusing, is with the state with the lawsuit in Maine, that did conclude and it did go to court. And as you heard, it was adjudicated there, and they decided in favor of the state. And then the state turned around and came to our organization, and I think they came to probably other companies as well, but I can only speak to mine, then came to us after they passed this law and went through the court challenge and asked us if we would be the PBM for their mail order component for their drug policy, for their state policy, at which point we declined that offer and have to date had a company policy to decline to do business in the state of Maine that is subject to the rules and regulations that they passed. So to be honest, it makes absolutely no sense what they did. They went around and passed the law and went through a court challenge and then turned right around and came back and asked the very people that they took to court to administer their drug benefit. I find that ironic.
Thank you, Mr. Root. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify in favor or in opposition to this bill? Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, a couple of comments on some of these comments. I'll start with the last one about how he finds it ironic that they want to do business with the PBM after going to court or after the PBMs took them to court. I'd argue the same thing happened. The drugstores took the pharmaceutical companies to court, and they still buy drugs from those pharmaceutical companies. They've attempted to try and portray that as this is something that is saying that PBM should not exist, and this doesn't say anything about that. This is simply doing the direction that we did in Senate File 3099, where we're trying to have flat prices. They can set whatever prices they want for the drugs, but they have to price them fairly for all their customers. And I would love to see one of these PBMs with a straight face say that they're complying with that Chapter 151.061 on the unfair price discrimination, which prohibits any person doing business in the state and engaged in distribution other than retail, which is every one of these companies, of any prescription drugs who shall discriminate. And I could read you the entire thing where they talk about unfair discrimination shall embrace any scheme. And again, 35 years ago, our predecessors in the legislature recognized they were schemes of special rebates, collateral contracts, or device of any nature which in substance violates the provisions of this subdivision. And I'm saying that disclosure of this not only is in the trend that we're trying to do in Senate File 3099 and other bills, but it's also necessary to enforce what we have in law for 35 years. And again, they keep telling us, Ms. Carol Shearn says how, you know, this thing works, and they're saying how they get such great deals for people. Do remember that what I mentioned earlier, which is accurate, and that is in that lawsuit that they were disclosing disparities of 12-1 price disparities, nothing to do with volume purchasing, nothing to do with shipping distances, simply to do with price dealings. That means some customers were paying, and it tended to be the senior citizens, the people without health insurance plans, who had nobody negotiating for them, paying 1,200% what the other customers were paying for it. And there's something wrong with that kind of marketplace. And on top of that, I think you've all seen the numbers on how much more we pay than people in Mexico or Canada or other countries for the identical drugs from the identical manufacturers. If we think this is a good scheme, great. But I think the reason we have so many people protesting, the reason Senior Federation had buses, and Governor Pawlenty has been pushing people going to Canada to buy import drugs is simply because we can't get a fair price here. And that's what this bill is all about. But I'm happy to stand for questions.
Thank you. Questions, Senator Hand.
Madam Chair and Senator Marty, I would suggest that one of the reasons why the prices are lower in Canada and Mexico is because the taxpayers of the United States are subsidizing that, or at least the customers of the drug companies. The thing that's ironic here, I guess, if anything, is this idea that a legislative body can set a price. And that's essentially what your bill is saying that we ought to do. That the kind of thing that this bill would require the disclosure of information that would prevent a price being set in a private enterprise situation that is typical in every business. And what we're saying is we don't want that. And I think, as the testimony indicated, when you take that ability to set to negotiate for goods and services and negotiate costs, you take that out and you make that all public, what you do then is you do away with any ability to get differentiation. And without differentiation, you do not get efficiencies, you do not get lowering of costs, you get raising costs. And that's true in every case. And I think, as was indicated, if we go down this route and PBMs decide, well, there's not in our business interest to do business in the state of Minnesota like they did in Maine, maybe we as a state have to get in the business of being a business entity and doing these things. I think that the committee ought to understand that these kinds of things, setting prices, it's a complex issue. It's not, you can't dictate those things. And yet that's what we're trying to do. And I don't think that any of us here have the knowledge or the experience of this business to determine how best to run their business. I've read some of the information provided, opinions of the FTC and others. I find it persuasive. I think that a marketplace has the tendency to drive prices down and create efficiency. And their argument in the testimony is that that's been happening. And why we'd want to go in and say, no, let's not have that. Let's have a mechanism that will destroy that ability to be competitive in the marketplace. And why we would think that that would result in lower costs is beyond me. It seems illogical. So I would argue, Mr. Chairman, that this bill, we ought to set it aside and not continue with it. I just don't see the value of this to the people that we say we're trying to help.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Hand, first of all, I want to make it clear, this is not setting prices. And when the market's working so well and these plants are doing such a great job for us, you said at the beginning of your comments that the reason they're lower in Canada and Mexico and other places is because we're subsidizing them. And you acknowledge it wasn't the government subsidizing them. It was us, the customers, subsidizing them. So these guys who are doing this wonderful job of negotiating prices for us are negotiating such a lousy deal that we are subsidizing other countries' drug prices. And I just think that in itself shows you that the system doesn't work. And I don't think we should be subsidizing other countries' drug prices. I just don't think that that's a good deal for Minnesota customers. And in terms of the state being in the business, I know I did support Governor Pawlenty's proposal to have the state be involved in this, in the importation of drugs, not because I think it's a good thing for our pharmacies here, but because they don't have a lot of choice, people who can't afford the drugs. But again, they are negotiating for us, and as you said, we're subsidizing other states.
And Madam Chair, to that point.
Senator Hand has a question, and Mr. Rowan, you can come back up to the table if you want to.
And Senator Marty, what I meant by that is that Canada, for example, dictates the price to the say, here's what we'll pay. And so the pharmaceutical companies, they have to offer their products at that price, whether it's competitive or not. But they, as a business, still have to make a profit. So if they can't make a profit by selling their drugs in Canada because they're forced to sell it at a price that isn't competitive, then they have to make their profit in the United States or other places. And so my point is simply that when you dictate a pricing structure to a business, you're never going to get efficiency and you're always going to get higher prices. And I dispute the point that you're saying we're not setting prices. The effect of your disclosure is going to result in a set price that is going to be dictated by whatever the legislature decides to do.
Madam Chair, on one of your points there about Canadian prices, and now I've dropped it. Let Mr. Rowan go. Remember what the point was I wanted to comment on.
Madam Chair, Senator Hand's exactly right. I mean, and Senator Marty's correct, too. But let me try to explain. Canada sets prices. Every country in Europe sets prices. most major countries in the world set drug prices. We've made a decision in the United States that we don't set the drug prices. Now, because of that, you're right. We do subsidize drugs in the rest of the country because the drug manufacturers, just like any other business, have to develop an economic model that works. And if they lose money in one place, let's be honest, they make it up somewhere else or they quit doing that business. Now, if we're here today to talk about Minnesota setting drug prices, I think we can address the inequity and the subsidization issue. I think we can address it head on. We can start setting prices, and we will no longer subsidize the drug company. Someone else will. But I don't think that's what we're talking about. And in the absence of doing that, the only way to get price concessions from manufacturers is, quite honestly, to do what PBMs currently do in the marketplace, which is negotiate discounts. And we do that in secret. We do that in secret. Just like any other business negotiates with its wholesaler or its supplier in secret. When you go to Home Depot, you don't know what Home Depot paid for that shovel. And you know what? You don't care. You know what that shovel costs. And if it's $10, you're okay with it. If it's $20, it's too high, and you go to Target and see if you like their price there. And you don't know what Target paid for it either. This is the same situation. We're trying to apply the same type of market discipline to prescription drugs that you use throughout the marketplace. And in the absence of setting prescription drug prices, this is the best mechanism you have. But now let me say this. You can take this away, and maybe there's another way to do it. I don't think there is. And if you take this away, we're taking a risk, quite frankly. We're taking a risk that we're not going to find a better way to do it short of setting prices. The marketplace is working. That's PBMs have developed for a reason. There's a reason why every major company uses a PBM to manage its prescription drug services.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, I remembered my point from Ms. Ruin's comment. First of all, I would like to make it clear again, because I've only said it about four times, and that is that this is not saying that there should not be PBMs or that the state or anybody else should not use PBMs, because that there is some logic to having somebody manage your pharmaceutical use. That's not the point. The point here that I wanted to make about Senator Hahn's comment, and Mr. Rowan sort of suggested the same thing, and that is the idea that the drug companies are losing money selling drugs in Canada or Mexico, that they choose to sell drugs in a country at a loss. Maybe they think they'll make up for it in volume. I mean, that old joke about if you're losing money on a product, maybe you'll make up for it in volume. They are making a profit in Canada. They're making very good profits here. Matter of fact, of the Fortune 500 companies, the average pharmaceutical company here has about triple the rate of return of other Fortune 500 companies. I could go into more of that, but that's not the issue here. The point is that in Canada, we are subsidizing them because we're paying too much, not because they're not paying enough, because the drug companies would not be selling in Canada if they weren't making money selling it.
Any other questions, Senator Dahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Rowan, I was just so I can understand out of this pharmacy benefits package, the things that you do, you sell to the larger entities like the state and things like that, and the way you're saving money is by dealing with the manufacturers of the drugs? Is that where you're saving money?
That's one of the ways that we save money. We also save money by negotiating discounts from retail pharmacies. We save our clients money by making mail order pharmacy services available to them. But we also save them money through the medical management things that we do. Let's be honest, every time a doctor writes a prescription, it's not necessarily the right thing for that patient. May not be the right prescription for that patient. So we help our clients put benefit structures in place, have outreach programs that maybe suggest alternatives to physicians that may be a more effective product. Physician ultimately makes the decision on what's prescribed for the patient and what's not. But we help our clients navigate that system on a number of different fronts to save money.
Okay, thank you. And
Senator Dahl.
I'm Chair, and Senator Marty, so I understand the bill. This disclosure, you're saying now, if they have some retail outlets that they're negotiating with, that if they have a contract with Pharmacy A and they want to go to Pharmacy B, they need to disclose that information to Pharmacy B? I'm not clear again how this is supposed
Senator
to work.
Dahl, what they'd be disclosing is their financial and use information from the covered entities, which are their clients, in effect, the people who they are covering, the health plans, the page one, bottom of the page, describes who all their insurance companies, hospitals, others. They have to disclose to them all their dealings with the pharmaceutical companies, any of their price stuff, that any collateral contracts, any rebates, any discounts, other economic incentives.
Senator, okay. Oops, I'm sorry. Follow up, Senator Dahl.
No, that's fine.
Okay, Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Marty, I have listened to all of the testimony this afternoon and this evening, I guess. And, Senator Marty, it occurs to me that we are under deadline. And it would seem to me that you're going to be doing some further work on this, continuing. And I do share some, not all, but some of the concerns that have been brought forward, in particular with regard to Section 4, the disclosure section. And so, Senator Marty, I just encourage you, as you continue to work on this, and I think it is a very good effort to work on. I'm very supportive of the pharmacy benefit managers. I think that's a very important component of overall healthcare reform. But I'd be interested in further working on the disclosure aspect, and would just encourage you to take another look at that section. And if I can help you in some fashion as we move forward, I'd be happy to do that.
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, let me, a couple quick comments. One is I think we could clarify one word that was made earlier. Number two, I recognize the hour is late, and this has now been requested by Judiciary Committee. So because it's not likely to happen this year and because the hour is late, I think I would say your advice is a good one and that we should set it aside and keep working on it, because I think the bill would be, with the one clarifying term, I'd be ready to pass it on. And I could do that now, but I know you and others would feel more comfortable if we have more discussion over it. I think this is a very good
Senate.
You may not like it opening salvo, but with that, I will, because of the late hour, I recognize how late it is, so I will lay the bill over.
Thank you. Senate file 3071 has been laid over. Thank you.
701.
Thank you. And Senator Marty, is that all the work for the committee?
Madam Chair, I think that was the last bill on the agenda. And if so, we as a committee have collectively, barely perhaps, but survived deadline number one.
Mr. Chair, what's the plan for next week? We have second deadline.
Madam Chair, I'll ask Ms. Bubar if she knows what the schedule is for. I think it's only daytime meetings next week.
Yes, we're having a meeting on Monday, just agency bills that are remaining that have passed the House. We're having a meeting on Wednesday daytime to pass a series of little bills that have come from the House, meeting first deadline, and then also Prairie St. John's is Wednesday.
Thank you. With that, then, Senator Marty and committee members, we are adjourned.
Excellent.